Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, depending upon where you are in the world. This is Walter Davis with Progress in the World Radio Show, coming to you from beautiful Canyon Lake, California, where we are experiencing a cool down, but we're about to go back up into the triple digits once again here in Southern California, and it's just expecting to be a scorching day. I'll be wearing white again with my white fedora hat when I go out. But again, it's very nice to be in Southern California where we have fresh fruit and vegetables all the time and just helps us to be healthy. Today, we are going to once again be discussing a book written by Dr. Carol. And we'll be on part 17, The Benefits of Shedding Tears, in the book Heal Your Life, 25 Ways to Unleash Your Innate Healing Powers by Finding Your Purpose and Connecting with a Higher Power. Dr. Carol is a board-certified OBGYN and primary care specialist and an intuitive and spiritual leader who has helped thousands of men and women for the past four decades. Her life purpose is to educate as many people through telephone consultations, her writing, speaking engagements, podcasts, and radio shows. You can pre-order the book at a link which is contained within the description of this broadcast, and you can also visit her website at drcarol.com/podcast. Listen to the archives of all of the shows that we've done in this entire series. So, without further ado, welcome to the show, Dr. Carol.
Thank you. Welcome. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on wherever you are and when you are listening to it. And today, like Walter said, we're talking about shedding tears and how is it very good for your health. Men don't cry. When you try to cry, they say, no, you shouldn't cry. You try to be tough. But shedding tears, people might not realize, is a great way to help release the stress. And like Walter said before, how do you call tears, releasing tears, Walter?
Well, to me, tears are like emotional sweat. When your emotions get really hot, your body helps you get through it by releasing tears and thus to cool it down for you. So if you can imagine, if you could shut off your sweat when you get hot and temperature-wise, imagine what would happen to your body if you couldn't sweat. And so in the same token, imagine if you didn't cry when your emotions get really hot.
The scientifically, what is that shown that when they examined the tears, when people have been crying, and they noticed that it's not only water, there were a lot of toxins that in the tears. Let's say then 98%, there is 98% there is water, but when you're under stress and you cry, the degree of toxins in the tears are much higher. Before I could continue saying anything about how crying and releasing tears are helpful, I would like to go back and explain about stress, when the stress stays in our body, how eventually it will make us sick, altering our immune system and make us more likely to get sick, and from having the common cold to even having cancer. People don't know why we have cancer, but we know that the environment, and there are many things that will make the cells in our body to go awry and then eventually starting multiplying, not the way they're supposed to, but more erratically, and that's where cancer is about. It's just like the cells are just doing whatever they want instead of what they're supposed to. So we do have stress in our lives, and it's part of a way to for us to stay alive. And we need some good stress. We have to remind us to be to wake up. Yes, there were things we have to do to if there is something we need to. There is a slight danger to run away from it. Unfortunately, in this everyday world today, busy, everybody going up and down, we do have what is called negative stress. And what the negative stress does, like I said before, is undermining our health. And stress can occur with the majority of things. I have created a cake. I call it I wanted to call it a pizza, but my woman patients with and they have PMS. And this is like chocolate batter, chocolate cake. But I would say a cake, and with multiple slices that include ourselves, how we see ourselves. Sometimes we might be our enemy. Then we have our personal relationship with our intimate partners, our children, our relatives, and our coworkers, colleagues, and neighbors. And also we have our finances. We have our spiritual health, how strong we are spiritually, that is going to cause us to be more likely to experience the stress and the environment and et cetera, our career, our job, et cetera. So those are triggers that is going to occur one way or another in our lives that is causing us to be stressed. But why do we become ill? It's that when we don't know how to respond to stress, number one, it's accumulating, and number two, not knowing particularly how to get to release the stress. I equate it because I'm a cook. I'm told I'm a great cook, and also I cook things like beans, and to make them quicker, you cook dry beans, you cook them in a pressure cooker. So I use the pressure cooker a lot. So what it is, if you turn the fire under the pressure cooker, and the fire the pressure builds within the pressure cooker, and eventually there have to be a valve to release it. So you imagine we're cooking in it, and then there is no valve. So, and tears, when I'm thinking about the tears, will be just like the valve release for this, the pressure which is accumulating in the pressure cooker, or the stress that is accumulating in our body. So why is tears very important? It is because one of the things, when people come to me, when I'm seeing a patient, and I would never see a patient in person without having a tissue, a box of tissue. And not only have a box of tissue, I have another one already in case, while I am seeing that particular patient, he or she uses the boxes. And because I've had patients in working while I'm with them, and then the box ends, and then I didn't have another one, and then the person has to use I remember it was a gentleman, and he has to use his T-shirt, because there is something about when you are in a situation and you feel comfortable, and then that's what I do when I'm with my patients, and then the tears will go freely, and you could see the men, you know, because, you know, we're told men don't cry because you need to be strong, and then so they are less likely to cry, but I would say, it's okay. I will extend my hands and hold a hand or two hands, and then it's, let the tear go freely, and then that's where the healing starts. What do they tell, especially men? Walter, I said when we were in a conversation before, what happened to you with your father? Walter, when you were trying to cry, because you're a man and I'm a woman, and we have a different way of seeing things. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, my father would take me and just shake me. I remember him shaking me so hard in the backyard, telling me that men don't cry. So what I learned to do is go behind the garage and cry so my father wouldn't see me. And that set a trend for me, where I learned to hide my emotions and hide my feelings. And so it got to a point where I never knew how I felt. And I always told people what I thought. And I noticed that today that a lot of people will say, I feel, and then they tell me a thought. So most people don't know how to identify what they feel. They identify their thoughts. And so this is how I turn to chemical substances like alcohol to cover up my emotions. And that caused a numbing effect, and it caused me to detach from my feelings. And what I've learned now is that strong people are the ones that have the courage to go through their feelings, people that allow themselves permission to be human beings and allow themselves permission to cry. Those are the strong people. The weak people are the ones that are trying to cover up all the time.
Yes. And, you know, for women, we have more permission to cry. And then, even during circumstances, and then the woman would start to cry, a woman was given more permission to shed the tears and start crying. Nobody would say, oh, you cannot cry because you're a girl, because I guess it's sort of expected. So essentially, it's been easier for a woman to express themselves in their pain to their tears. But there are many cases that, for example, many patients that I see, they don't cry. From seeing many different patients and traveling, and then what is it people, even women, do not shed tears, do not cry, even in the situation where I'm usually giving patients a sense of security and they will start crying, whether they are men or women, and I'm finding out there are many reasons. Number one, if you see the studies of orphans, children who are in an orphanage, and then there is nobody. They cry, and they learn that, hey, if I cry, nobody's going to come. So they learn not to cry. And also, there were people who are trying to be strong around other people. And then if I cry, and then if I cannot cry because it's going to be, I have the children, I'm a single parent, or I don't want my children to see that we're having problem with my spouse, and especially for the wife, and whatever things are happening. And also, I want to be strong. So all these people are going to be, and that's what they do. They just not learn how not to shed their tears. So one of the things you need to ask yourself, how do you respond when you're under stress? Do you let your tears go freely, or do you have any issues why you hold on to it and you don't want to let the tears flow? What is it? So writing down, hey, do I let my tears flow? Because like I said before, one of the reasons I wrote this book, and I felt that was as important that I put it, you have to be able to freely use that natural ways of let the valve of the pressure cooker flow, let it open so it doesn't burst inside. Because when people do not, when you are in pain and when you stress and you're not using these simple things that shedding your tears, you know the consequences of the stress. So many people, they don't have, one of the things that we realize also when I travel other countries, it is very difficult for people to cry. They don't have a way to cry. So I remember, they have a say in my country, where do you go to be able to cry when you feel like it? Because they don't have a psychologist, they have somebody who can help you with your dealings. So we have a way of saying, find a funeral. So you go and find a funeral, and you say who died, and the person is, and you say the name is John, and you go to the funeral and say, oh, John, I'm so sorry, and you start crying, John, because you are allowed in a certain situation, especially during the funeral, to cry, because that's. But I remember when I came here to America and I went to a funeral and I realized people were not crying, and I'm saying, oh my God. And so even also it's a cultural thing. Even you can be a woman, even a situation that people were just like sniffing with, you know, not, and then not really letting it go. So the so what is the and as we know about the what is going to happen if we don't, so we have to find a way to do it. Any feedback that you have, Walter?
Yes, what I have seen is that people who do not allow themselves permission to cry and go through their feelings, they tend to manifest other health problems. And of course, you know, I hate crying in terms of, you know, the mucus comes out of your nose, your eyes are all watery, you could get a headache from crying. It can come in inappropriate times where, you know, you want to project strength, and that's happened to me before. Sometimes when I'm trying to tell the story of my upbringing in Birmingham and I get to the part where my father was murdered, sometimes I can't maintain my composure and I'm doing public speaking. So it's always a risk for me to tell that story. So I have to prepare myself emotionally and mentally when I'm going into a public arena to speak. But one of the things is that when I'm at home or if I'm in my car, there are a lot of triggers, and I try to release my tears whenever I can, because I don't want to hold that stress. I don't want to hold it in, and it's very stressful to try to hold in my tears. So just like what you said, there are toxins in tears, and so that's one of the ways that your body evacuates toxins and helps you deal with stress. And stress undermines our health, as you said. And I hear people all the time that say, well, I don't want to cry because my kids are going to see me cry. You know, there's been a death in the family. You know, I recently had a good friend whose sister jumped off of a three-story building. And she had cancer, and she died. And so that's one of the things that my friend was saying, that they didn't want to cry in front of their kids, even though all this is going on. And so one of the things I tried to do was I did cry in front of my kids because I wanted to show them an example that it is okay to be human. It's okay to give yourself permission to be human and to cry. And I didn't want to be like my father, to instill in them that there's something wrong with you if you're crying. So you should be ashamed of yourself if you're doing that. And so it is a source of strength for me to be able to go through my emotions and not around them.
Yes. And like we mentioned before, it is very difficult for men to cry, but also it is for some women, it is very difficult for them to cry. I remember seeing a patient, and she came to me and saying that she was diagnosed with attention deficit disorder, ADHD. And then this is a patient that I knew her when she was in her early 20s. I delivered two of her children, and that she was very intelligent and working and doing very well for herself with a career. And then she came to see me for a consult when she was, let's say she was 49 years old, and she told me that she was diagnosed with ADHD, adult attention deficit disorder. And I'm saying, and then they gave her a very strong medication, and she was having side effects with it. So so she called me. So I was doing a consult, and then I said, why would you have attention deficit disorder? And then she said, my children will tell me that I just disappear. I just whenever there is a problem, and mom just disappear, And so when I ask her, when we ask her questions, I ask her, what has been going on in your life? And this is what I realized. When she was 6 years old, her father died. When her father died, she went and lived with her with an aunt. There was many children, six children, so they just divide the children between family members. Because her mother couldn't take care of all of them. So she ended up with an aunt. With an aunt who was very cruel and very emotionally, physically abusive to her. So she said, in the morning, she used to wet her bed. And when she wakes up in the morning, and the aunt will realize, you know, she's the bed is wet, and the bed will beat her up. We're talking, gives her a beating. And then she was living in the country where there was no protective services, so there was no going to a school where she can say to the teacher something is wrong so they could rescue her. So she realized, and she told me the beating went for a long time until she realized whenever, of course, she was being beaten, the aunt will just, she will see there as a pleasure to her, I'm going to beat you, and you're going to cry, oh, no, don't help me. And she started to realize that, all right, whenever she's beating me, she found out herself, she was 9 years old, I'm not going to cry. I'm going to be stoic. I'm not going to say anything. And she's going to beat me and beat me, whatever she is. And then for her to be able to tolerate the pain of the beating, she would just disappear. So she would just leave her body. And then this is while we're talking, realizing that. I said, oh, my God. And so this is what happened. She just disappeared. So she was outside of her body watching and beating a stick where so they can tolerate it. And because there was no reaction of the aunt, you know, I guess people who are abusing children find a pleasure to knowing the child is crying and then begging, please don't do this. And then now she's stoic and totally look at the aunt in the eyes and then take the beating, and eventually that's how the abuse stopped. But then what it did for her over the years were whenever she's in a situation that will be very difficult for her, one way for her to feel better or to not to deal with it without realizing it was just not be there. And then so that's when we realized, oh, that was the reason. Even the children say, Mom, you're never there. You're never there. And then having the opportunity for her to connect her past, connect the abuse, connect the reason where there is, even though anything would happen to her, she would just either not be there or totally have no emotion. So, and then now, whenever things will happen to her, eventually now, by the time the things would happen, by the time you're going to go to menopause, and it's just like, all the issues that you've had, you have to heal those issues. And then so then they would present for her, she was diagnosed with, oh, this is what happened. You and except that, how would I explain? Whatever was happening to her, what she was given a diagnosis, which is totally due to the trauma that she had. So being able to, find out the cause of it and deal with it. So she has to learn. It took time working with her to learn that, to feel the emotions, to feel, to be around her, because it makes it difficult for her in a relationship. And then for being present, being able to be in a conversation, whether is it not comfortable or any situation, and eventually with time, starting opening her emotions, starting to start to feel. So it took a long time for her, and then she essentially continued working. She went to working with a therapist that would help her over time. And I remember seeing her for a while and say she's doing much better, but the not able to feel the emotions. And then not only is going to be detrimental to your health, but as well as the relationship that you have around you.
So that's very interesting that she was able to just leave her body and just detach. And I think that's what a lot of people do, especially men in combat, for example. They just compartmentalize and detach in major catastrophic situations. For those of you who just joined us, my guest today is Dr. Carol, the author of the upcoming book, Heal Your Life, 25 Ways to Unleash Your Innate Healing Powers by Finding Your Purpose and Connecting with a Higher Power. She is a board-certified gynecologist and primary care specialist and an intuitive and spiritual leader who has helped thousands of men and women for the past four decades. Today we are discussing Step 17, the benefits of shedding tears. Thanks for being with us live or via the chat room. If you have a question, please call in at 310-861-2349 or enter your question in there at the chat room. So this is really interesting that our body gives us a very simple avenue to heal when we've been damaged, yet we struggle so hard to resist that healing process. So
the
I think yes, go on.
Go ahead.
So I think it has to do with a cultural issues, whereas men are told not, you know, that we're told not to cry, that people that are crying are looked at as being weak, and immature. You know, babies are crying all the time, so we try to stop the baby from crying. We have this thing inside of us to stop crying, to not cry ourselves, to stop other people from crying. One of the things I did when in my group settings is that I never offered my clients or my patients tissue. I mean, I had the tissue box there, but I didn't give it to them until they asked for it. I wanted them to go through the experience of catharsis. And when I gave people the tissue, they were able to just suck that all back up inside of them and hide behind the tissue, wipe away all the tears, and suddenly they're back again. They go back into themselves, whereas when I was able to touch into a nerve, so to speak, a touch into an issue that was perhaps in their blind, hidden, or secret, or unknown area, I think that I did them a disservice when I gave them the tissue. Even in my group settings, I didn't allow the other group members. The other group members would pick up the tissue and pass it around to the person that was crying, and I would say, no, don't, and I would motion not for them to do that. I made the person ask for the tissue in order to wipe away the tears, and so, but that was a different setting. That was a setting whereas I was dealing with people that were facing drug addiction and alcoholism. So I made sure they were able to recover.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I made sure they were able to recover themselves before they left the group setting or my office. You know, I didn't want them to go back out into the public, without being able to recover themselves and looking disheveled, so to speak. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Oh no, that's okay. You see, in my situation, it is different. Many times, for example, a patient. Let's say if I'm at the clinic, and I'll give you an example. I had a patient who, they referred her to me because she was bleeding. She was bleeding, she was hemorrhaging, and then they didn't know what to do. I am sort of the end stage. The patient doesn't have any insurance, and we don't know what to do with her. All the medications we give to her doesn't work, and so we're going to send her to me. So many of these patients, when they come, they've been, sometimes they wait for me for a month to come and see me, and they're expecting another, or they're going to see a doctor who's going to be asking them questions, poke them, do biopsies or whatever, but they're not expecting somebody who's going to go right there, look at them into their eyes and say, what's wrong with you? I give an example, and it could be many, whether men and women. That particular patient has been bleeding for months, and she was anemic. She ended up in the emergency room, and then they had to give her 2 units of blood, and then so they sent her to me. And then I go to the clinic with affiliated to UCSD School of Medicine, and then before they try to, we're talking about patients who have no insurance, and how do we deal with it? So they always send them to me. Before we try to send them out of the system to see what can be done for them, and that particular patient, when I saw her, she was sitting there. One of the things I do not stand up, and I always have the patient sit in the chair, and where we talk, and then I never have them get undressed or anything, regardless of if I have to do a biopsy or something. So here I am with that patient, and I ask her, why are you here for? She said, I've been bleeding, and then looking at her notes, and yes, she's anemic and everything. And I realize they've done everything. They've done everything for her. And I ask her, why are you bleeding? And she looked at me, and she stood up. She said, I lost my son. And nobody is just like, they've been treating her symptoms, which is the tip of the iceberg, without looking at exactly what is the root cause of her bleeding, excuse me, and not responding to the treatment they've been giving to her. And she said, I lost my son. So she stood up and started crying. And then he just, nobody ever asked me, I lost my son. And then even myself, I could not help shedding tears with the patient as well. And then so it was just pouring. So it seems that all the toxins, when I'm with the patient, all the toxins just comes out, all the things that have been bottled up to make her sick so much that she was hemorrhaging to death would just come out. And so in the situation like that, I always stand up with the patients, because the patient is just like, oh my God, and then they will stand up. And eventually what I would do, I learned to put one foot forward, my left foot forward, and my back foot backward, because the person usually instinctively holds me and put their hands behind my waist. And they will cry and cry. So at the time, they have to cry. And then I never stop them, because I find out that the crying is just, oh my God, somebody understands. It's not only that, it's not just somebody, it's a doctor who finally understands why, because nobody ever asked me. So that learning, that particular patient, she would just, in tears, she had lost her son, and then she wanted her son to say, I love you, mommy. So I became her son, and just kissing her through her tears. That's why a loving mom or a loving son, that will do to the a loving son or a loving mother, and it's to kiss that person. And that's what I end up doing. And while I'm rocking her, and she cries. So usually when I'm with patients and they're crying, and so I let them cry, and then until I hear a deep exhale. They continue to hold me anyway. They don't let me go, and I would not do anything until they do the deep exhale. It seems that all the pressure, the steam coming out of the pressure cooker, and I just rock them until they stop, and by rocking them and letting them an opportunity to have. It seems that all the toxin coming out in one big exhale, and then and then have them sitting down again, and then continue with the medical visit. So the my experience has been for these people, for example, for this particular woman, she it's been like 10 months that her son had died, and she was constantly crying. So what her usually the father, the men do not continue crying. They find a way, okay, my son is dead, I'm going to move on. So that's why so many times there would be, whenever there is something drastic that happened, tragic that happened in the family, people usually get a divorce because people have different ways of healing. The woman will continue crying and crying and crying while the men will say, I've moved on, because men cry, but they eventually move on quicker. Women, we were made this way, where with the tears that we have, that's what help us with the healing. But many times, sometimes continuously crying too much also is not only we continue with the grief, sometimes doing it too much, the opposite is different as well when you do it too much, and also it is very difficult for those around us. So many patients that I deal with, I am the first time that they're able to cry in front of somebody and don't feel it's a burden. But also by giving them tools how to continue with the grief of what happened, then that will, instead of going to a doctor, and in many of those patients, they might not go to a therapist. They only come to a medical doctor. So they don't go to a... They are able to find the tools that will help them heal the situation. And sometimes it's not a death. It could be somebody who is in an abusive relationship or somebody who's a CEO of a big company who's experiencing anxiety, or somebody who was bullied or molested in the past. So when they are with me, the situation, they come for particular symptoms, fibromyalgia, insomnia, anxiety. They're looking for treatment for those particular symptoms, however the body is reacting from the stressor. So by at the time when they find that out, so it's just like, oh my God, there is a reason, I'm not crazy, or so there will be the tears, and then by helping them, able to, there is something where you feel you are in front of a doctor, and then you are able to cry, because I found out part of my healing, able to give, I don't say, like my father said, you don't heal anybody. One way to give a person an opportunity to heal themselves, to be the mirror for them to see what's going on, and then with the tears and allowing them, it's okay. Because people feel, oh, I'm not supposed to cry in front of a doctor. The doctor is not therapist. They're supposed to be telling me this is my symptom if you're bleeding. But allowing them and making, that's what I do, and making them understand it is okay to cry. And then, and of course, the person, when it happened the first time, they usually feel so bad about it that, of course, if they've been trained, you don't cry, especially you don't go and cry in front of a doctor and with a gynecologist and somebody, or when I go to a clinic. I'm not seeing people as a consultant where the person will not experience emotional problems, or, you know, I cannot sleep, I feel overwhelmed, I feel stuck. And then by able to take a look at, I call it the 30 to 30,000 foot view, looking at their lives and looking at everything that was happening and help them make sense out of it, as well as giving them a plan of things of what to do, that alone will bring the tears. So it's always, I like watching them having crying, because it's just like, at that particular moment, he just like the toxins are coming, so a bunch of them are getting out very quickly. Not only, and what is happening is that, oh my God, there is an end to this suffering. I can understand why I am sick. I can understand why I can't stop bleeding. I can understand why my body is hurting, and in many times it's tears of relief, and it's healing tears, and so that's one of the reasons I would have the tissue there. And if I'm doing it over the phone, I tell the person, make sure you have tissues, and then just we over the phone, I don't see. But you could, and also one of the things I've learned is that the person will cry, but also while they're crying, it's all these deeply buried emotions that come to the surface, and many times the people didn't even realize that for those who learn, why am I going to cry? I've been dealing with this for such a long time. So by giving them, by the discovery, oh my God, this is what happened, and crying. And then that's the time I said, you know, crying it's going to be very helpful until you learn to deal with the situation. I remember I had a patient who came that I saw, and she was bleeding. You know, as a gynecologist, many times that's most of the patients I see, especially when I go to the clinic. She was bleeding because she had a new boss, and then the new boss, you know, it was like she's been she was 2 years from retirement, and she's bleeding, and the new boss came and then creating havoc, and then she was too old to quit, and then she was to find another job. She loved a job, and then so the time of readjustment of having to be with this new boss that is making her crazy was she experiencing bleeding, and then she couldn't sleep. So, and then I would tell her when we realized, oh, the bleeding is, you know, it happened 3 months after. The boss came 6 months prior to that date, and then 3 months later, she started with the bleeding, and it took some time to come and see me. So I told her that one of the tools that I gave to her is just like when she's at work and she feels that the tension is so much between her and her boss, she had to go and scream. She had to just go, and if she just go somewhere. And she said they have, I think, there's a room where there's a safe in the room. So it's a padded room. And I said, and she has to go there for a while. I said, this is what you do, because you might be working, and then there is you cannot go to the bathroom or go outside. People say, what's wrong with you? But, and then so a safe place she would find to release the pressure of all the stress that was occurring at work was going to the safe and just scream and just cry and just cry. And then, so by doing so and giving her different tools that she needed for that particular situation, she ended up the bleeding disappeared, and she didn't have to have any other tests or anything needs to be done by giving her the tears to whenever the pressure was too high at work. Not only the tears, the screaming, because just like you feel so powerless. One of the things, Walter, I've gone through many things in my life. The reason I have empathy and be able to understand my patients, so whenever they come, whether men or women now, because I do consult for men, I see men when I go to a clinic, and be able to understand is all the many things that have happened to me, and then also my gift as an intuitive healer, which means the ability to see, to know, and know, and know, is finding out the root cause of what's wrong with them, and by being able to discover this is what is wrong with you, then it's just like the tears would come out, just, oh my God, just the idea, oh my God, somebody understand what's going on to me. But what is happening to me as well as a person, we all have stress, and we all come into a situation where we got bad news about something, and we just feel so bad about it. And so, to me, my most vulnerable time, it's in the middle of the night, and I would get up for whatever reason, and then I'm unable to sleep, and I would feel the pain, and then it's just like for whatever reason, all the weight of the past comes in, and I realize it's just like during the time where I'm going through a hard time, and then the past that I've dealt with, I equate it like for like a, we have a, we are like a, we're supposed to be a wire, but then with the trauma that occurs to us, especially during childhood, we become a coil. So the strong, happy adult is able to stretch the coil, because we feel uncomfortable when we are like a coil, and so the state of being tight like this, that's what is causing us to be sick. So some people are going to have an addiction, a drug or something, or taking some medication to numb them, and some people like me, able not to take medications, but able to find the tools to stretch that coil to be comfortable. I am able during the day to do that. But what's happening is that I'm finding out at the middle of the night, I can just go ahead and just cry. And just excuse me. Sitting in the middle of the night, and just cry. And then when I do that, it just like all the weight of the world has been lifted. So that's what I teach to my patients. That's what I teach to the people whenever they are in a situation that they feel that the world is caving in, that they feel that there is no way out. A tear, just crying, just lift all the weight. And this is what has been happening to me. And then to me, this is a good armament of, regardless of, you know, I have patients say to me, you cry, you go to those moments as well. And then as well as, you know, when patients find out that, yes, you can be, or if I go speaking engagement, I'm speaking to a big crowd, and I tell them, yes, I do. Some, you know, even though you might look powerful in the podium and everything, but I am a human being like everybody else, and I can just, that's what I do. And having the tears is one of the way for me to release the pain, to release when the trauma of the past is trying to sink in and coming back again, and then it's easier way to just to go back to reality, to go back to the present, to go back to the possibilities of the future, to go back to the gratitude of the present, to all the great things that I have in my life, and then to understand that whatever it's occurring, it's supposed to be part of my destiny. It's supposed to be a part of the journey. It's supposed to be part of the lessons, and and being able to continuing on my journey, and it's being healthy at the same time, and just to see those little moment or hard time that occurs to all of us is just a part of a glitch. It's a glitch of life and those moments. So many times I pray, I stay in the dark, and many times I feel so uncomfortable, so I just cry, and then I have to turn on the light, and I have to and I have to just weep, and then I go back to sleep again.
Well, for me, I have also learned when my patients came to me and they shared something that was really powerful, one of the things that I would do is I would go and just hug them, and that would make them cry. And again, the majority of my clients when I was in the military doing treatment were males. And so that's why, for example, I didn't give them a tissue until they asked for it, or if they started to wipe it on their sleeve or something, then I would, you know, the tears. I would then give them the tissue, but it would have to be that point. They would have to ask or do an action like that, because it was so easy for them to go back into that facade. And I had reached a breakthrough with them when I finally got the trust and I finally got the ability to penetrate through all of those defenses and the walls that they had around them. It's kind of like having a handball, you know, that ball that bounces at a very high velocity. If you take that and you throw it into an enclosed room, that ball just bounces around inside that room. And that's the way that a lot of people have emotions bouncing around inside of them. And thus, I was able to turn on the relief valve, as you described, using a pressure cooker. And ironically, I was up this morning at like 1 o'clock cooking with a pressure cooker when I was doing that work on the website.
What were you cooking?
I was cooking mustard greens.
Oh, yeah, they're tough to cook. Pressure cooker is a great way to cook them very quickly.
Yeah, I put them in there for an hour and a half and some vinegar and sugar, and they taste wonderful. But I could tell when one of my clients was on the verge of tears, and all I had to do to break through their facade was just stand up and go over and say, give me a hug. And they would break down every time. And I always had to carry extra uniform shirts because people get snot on me and tears and all these other things. But that was a part of the process. And so with men, especially in a chemical addiction situation, it is really tough to get through to them and get through their defenses and to make it okay for them to shed tears. However, it was a big breakthrough. I remember a man telling me that he hated black people. He used another word. He used the N-word. I'm not going to say that on the air. But that's what he said. He hated the N-word people. And in fact, his uncle had been responsible for bombing my church in Birmingham, Alabama. And he bragged on it and how they had killed my friends, the four little girls that were killed in my church in September of 1963. And I told my supervisor, I said, I got this guy, you know, he uses the N-word. His uncle has been responsible for killing some of my friends, and he's bragging on it. But I want to keep him. I want to keep him as a patient. And I did. I kept him, and I reported to my supervisor every day, this is what's going on, this is what I did, to make sure that I was fair and impartial. So the bottom line is I kept this person for 6 weeks, and I was able to get him to lay his head on my shoulder and cry like a baby. And when he left my group, he said to me, I still hate N-words, but I love you.
That's
so that was
and
one
if,
of,
and yes, go ahead.
Go on.
No, continue.
Yeah, so that was one of my toughest cases. And when I went through school, they said to me, one day you're going to get your toughest client, and you're going to know. You're going to know when that person is standing in front of you. And that was it. I mean, I had to resist my own personal animosity for his position and for the way that he felt. However, I had to put that aside and deal with him as a human being and understand that I had a responsibility as a treatment specialist to put a wholer human being out into the world, and perhaps one that would come over to love as opposed to expressing hatred because of the painful upbringing that he had. So I had a responsibility to other people to make sure that I maintained an impartial position and put my own personal feelings aside to assist this human being. And that was one of the best things that I've done.
Yes, sounds wonderful. Unfortunately, some people, and being a woman, being black, and being in a position where I always, you know, I came to this country as a doctor, living here as a doctor, and I felt by the only way we can counteract hatred is by showing love, showing compassion, and that's what you did with that young gentleman and changed his life forever. So you will start seeing people, hopefully, started to see people differently. And then this is also, I feel sometimes being able to be there for my patients and being able to bring that motherly, I understand, empathy, and especially coming to a doctor, people always say, I wasn't expecting that. Because I say I'm a true healer, I wasn't expecting that, and it is always I'm expecting that you were going to understand me from all corners, and then not only that, and your gift as an intuitive healer to see what's going on and save me the time and the pain and the suffering, and then many times for many who have not cried before, and then saying, oh my God, I get the emotion of the. Suddenly, of the reality of this is what's happening, would just bring the tears, and also at the same time, for me holding them and then rock them and then sometimes kiss them. So I joke that I have kissed and hugged and rocked so many gorgeous men. I have a wonderful job. So and all races and all Chinese, Laotian, Filipino, Caucasian, all kinds, because they just melt in when I'm with them and I'm able to help them very quickly, and so that's the reason I have to have that box of tissues and then also giving them as not only the healing starts very quickly for whatever reason they came to see me, but also at the same time showing them that is okay by giving them a tissue, and I say yes, let it out, and then not stopping them. And then give them not only an opportunity to heal, an opportunity to understand who they are, an opportunity so they will, going forward, not only they will know what to do, getting the tools of what they need for dealing with their issues, but as well as giving them a tool and able to, with the tears, this is now a way to when things are the emotion. They are so overwhelmed, and it's okay. Also, what I do, I have learned, because when they're with me, it's because all the emotions are popping up. So what I do as well, I teach them like how to tap. I use their two fingers in index and middle finger of if they're left-handed, they're using their left hand. If they're right-handed, the right hand. And in tapping in the in their temple, when the emotion comes up, and just to tap, and so it doesn't have to be, so they can stop the emotions.
We have 1 minute left, Dr. Carol.
All right. So, do you want to do the closing then? Go ahead.
Yeah, so we've had the pleasure of having a discussion with Dr. Carol about her upcoming book, Heal Your Life, 25 Ways to Unleash Your Inner Healing Powers by Finding Your Purpose and Connecting with the Higher Power. And today we have been discussing the benefits of shedding tears. I want to encourage you all to pre-order her book. There is a link here within the description of the radio broadcast, also on our blog, and you can visit her website at drcarole.com. That is drcarolle.com. and that's /services if you want to set up an appointment and talk to her on the phone. It's been a great pleasure for all of you that have joined us on this broadcast. Please come back and join us next week where we talk about don't be afraid to ask for help. This is Walter Davis on Progress in the World. Thank you.